This is Tuesday, the 21st of February, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, President Trump speaks out about reports of increased anti-Semitic attacks in the United States.
The anti-Semitic threats targeting our Jewish community and community centers are horrible and are painful.
We will talk with VOA White House correspondent Bill Gallo about that. Also ahead, we take a trip to the heartland of America, from where you'll hear from many who voted for Donald Trump. And we hear the latest about the continuing investigation into the apparent assassination as a member of North Korea's ruling family. All on today's International Edition. In 3, 2, 1. President Donald Trump is calling recent threats against Jewish community centers horrible and painful. Trump made those remarks today after touring the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Earlier, the White House denounced hatred and hate-motivated violence without directly mentioning the recent threats against the centers or Jews. The FBI said it's joining with the Justice Department to investigate possible civil rights violations in connection with threats to Jewish centers across the country. Joining us is VOA White House correspondent Bill Gallo. Bill, although he's denounced intolerance, the president has been under some pressure to single out the increased threats being made against the U.S. Jewish community, especially threats against Jewish community centers across the country. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, well, he had been under increasing pressure, and that sort of had ramped up in the last day or two. Hillary Clinton, his election rival, of course, said in a tweet this morning that the threats against Jewish community centers and the desecration online attacks are troubling. They need to be stopped. Everyone must speak out, starting with President Trump. Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump's daughter actually tweeted yesterday that America is a nation built on the principle of religious tolerance. We must protect our houses of worship and religious centers. Now, that tweet actually stood out as being something that Donald Trump had not done yet. He hadn't used that kind of language. So there was pressure. Several Jewish groups had been calling on him to make these statements, and so that's apparently why he followed through.
Well, this follows, I guess we could call it a confrontation at a news conference that was held last week.
Right, yeah. President Trump was asked about this at a press conference last week by a Jewish reporter, and Trump responded sort of harshly, some said. And in fact, he called the reporter a liar. Here's the audio from that exchange.
Unfortunately, we do not have that, but we will continue with this conversation, Bill. Our apology for this technical difficulty. Our apology for this technical difficulty. We'll see if we can continue with that. If not, shall we just tell me if we should go ahead or not? Here we go. We'll go right to the headlines, and then we shall continue. Our apologies.
Condemning these instances.
And as we mentioned in the introduction, the FBI is joining with the Justice Department to investigate possible civil rights violations in connection with threats to Jewish centers across the country. We should mention here that no attacks have been carried out from any of these threats, and we will have to wait and see, number one, what happens with the possibility of continued threats to Jewish places of worship and Jewish community centers, but also how the Trump administration reacts to it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this will be a subject of investigations, and there's a lot of attention being put on it right now, that's for sure.
VOA White House correspondent Bill Gallo. Bill, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Ira.
Meanwhile, Jewish communities in Europe say they feel especially vulnerable following the terror attacks across the continent in recent years. Community leaders meeting at the Munich Security Conference also warn that the rise of populist far-right parties threatens their way of life. Henry Ridgewell has more from Munich.
With the Munich Security Summit wrapping up Sunday, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence and his family traveled the few kilometers out of the city to the site of the former Nazi concentration camp at Dachau. Nearly 32,000 deaths were recorded here, the vast majority Jews. U.S. troops liberated the camp on April 29, 1945. In total, 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. 72 years later, Jewish communities across the continent say anti-Semitism is on the rise again. A session was convened Sunday on the sidelines of the Munich summit to debate how Europe's Jewish communities can be protected. It was attended by former Israeli Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni, Chief Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt, President of the Conference of European Rabbis, told VOA security is the number one concern for Jews across the continent.
Terrorism, which we have seen in Toulouse, in Paris, in Copenhagen, in Brussels, which has impacted the Jewish community, has also created an exodus from some countries.
4% of the Jewish population in Belgium and France had left for Israel between 2010 and 2015, according to a recent study by the London-based Institute of Jewish Policy Research. Both countries have seen Jewish communities targeted. In 2014, an Islamic State-inspired attack on the Jewish Museum in Brussels killed 4 people. In 2015, gunmen attacked a kosher supermarket in Paris, the same day as the assault on the offices of magazine Charlie Hebdo. Terrorism expert Peter Neumann told the conference specific protection is needed.
Jewish communities are always in the front line, if you want, and that's why it's important that governments intensify their efforts to protect them. It's also important for Europe in a grander sense, because when Jews get attacked in Europe, it is not only Jews as individuals or as a community. In a sense, it is actually the very fabric of our society.
It's not only terrorism that's driving fear. The rise of the populist far right, especially National Front leader Marine Le Pen in France, has raised concerns that religious practices like circumcision or kosher food could be outlawed.
France is going to be a different country. Europe is going to be a different continent if Marine Le Pen becomes the president of France. There is a correlation, a strengthening of the extreme right in Europe as a byproduct of the changing administration in the United States, which is of concern.
Jewish representatives at the Munich conference called for European governments to dedicate extra policing and intelligence efforts to keep their communities safe. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Munich, Germany.
Among the top stories in the world, President Trump has condemned a recent surge in anti-Semitic threats across the country, saying they are going to stop. A military court in Israel has sentenced an Israeli soldier to 18 months in prison for killing a wounded Palestinian attacker last year in the West Bank. The Libyan Red Crescent says at least 74 bodies of African migrants have been recovered from the shores along Libya's northern coast. President Trump Monday named Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster as his new national security advisor. Transparency International says corruption is one of the root causes of violent extremism and that the international community needs to make tackling corruption a top priority in the ongoing battle against extremist groups. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
You've been on your computer for a couple of hours now, working on an important paper, and then, boom, your computer crashes. You may think this is due to a poorly written program or some other computer glitch, but new research suggests the problem may originate in deep space. Bharat Bhuva from Vanderbilt University says in many cases, problems with our electronic devices may be caused by streams of electrically charged particles produced by cosmic rays. While millions of these particles strike your body every second, they have no known harmful effects on living creatures. However, Bhuva says a portion of these particles can carry enough energy to affect microelectronic circuitry. He says, fortunately, makers of critical electronic devices, such as those used in aviation and medicine, are all aware of this problem and are working on measures to address it. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from VOA. The U.S. Midwest state of Kansas has historically voted Republican, rejecting Democratic presidential candidates since 1964. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti spoke to some strong Trump supporters and a rare Democrat to see how President Trump is doing during these first 100 days in office.
Woodson County, Kansas, America's heartland. Flat plains of prairie hay. Friendly people who like to linger a while.
Out here, people don't lock their doors. They have coyotes running around. And 3 out of 4 people voted for President Trump.
I think the heartland elected Donald Trump.
Rodney Greiser owns more than 1,000 hectares of corn and soybeans.
I think there's a common sense out here that people don't get when they're in the city. They have blinders on.
He says agriculture is a surplus industry, so he wants President Trump to make it more competitive in global markets.
If we wreck middle America, if we wreck agriculture, it will filter through the whole economy and eventually the coasts will feel it.
Agriculture is what's keeping Greiser's region alive, but barely. Woodson County is the poorest county in Kansas.
When I was a kid, we had 4 implement dealers and 3 or 4 car dealers, and don't got nothing left.
Gary Steele works the same hay farm where he was born. His sons moved out of state for jobs. He says the market for hay is dried up, same for corn.
Our input cost is awful high compared to the price we get out of stuff.
Steele's putting his hope in Trump.
So far, so good. He's pissed everybody off. That's a good sign.
Inside the Feed Bunk restaurant, a rare find, a table of mostly Democrats celebrating an 81st birthday. Wilhelmina Tressler didn't vote for Trump, but she has some advice for him.
Shut up. Sit down and listen to advisors around him. That'd be to start with.
Democrat or Republican, these Kansans have the same American dream. Bring jobs back and profits to the farms, and our kids will come home. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News in Woodson County, Kansas.
We continue on International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Authorities in Malaysia say they have yet to determine the cause of death in the case of the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, who died under mysterious circumstances February 13th while at the Kuala Lumpur International Airport. Prime Minister Najib Razak said Monday the investigation will be impartial. However, North Korea's ambassador has denounced it as politically motivated. Grainy closed-circuit video released by Japanese broadcaster Fuji TV appeared to show Kim Jong-nam approached by 2 women. One allegedly wiped his face with what is suspected to be poison. Kim, who had been living in Chinese-controlled Macau, died on his way to the hospital. South Korea has said it's nearly certain Kim was assassinated by North Korean agents. Malaysian police have 4 people in custody. They're seeking others. Malaysia analyst James Chin of Australia's University Tasmania told VOA's Victor Beattie while the investigation has caused strains between Malaysia and North Korea, he doubts the case will cause any permanent rupture.
I think what you're seeing is just ripples in the relationship. For the Malaysian side, this is a straightforward criminal investigation about the murder of a foreign national on Malaysian soil. For the North Korean, of course, it's much more important and sensitive because the victim is the stepbrother of the current ruler. But for both sides, I think they will take a step back after the whole thing is finalized, and I don't think there's any danger of them breaking up relations.
Well, Malaysia's been put in kind of a tough spot, hasn't it, given this investigation and involving a lot of players?
Yes, well, I think for the Malaysian side, they will treat it basically as a criminal case. In other words, they'll look at it purely from the point of view that a foreign national was murdered at a Malaysian airport. They'll do their very best to find out how the victim was killed. Was it by poison or by chemical or by some other stuff? And on the other hand, I think what they'll do eventually is that they will have to release the body to the North Koreans.
Will Malaysia conduct any follow-up legal proceedings in court, for instance?
Highly unlikely, for the very simple reason that it's quite obvious that the people who planned the murder is based in a foreign country, in this case, North Korea. And also some of the major operatives have already left Malaysia. And the latest report coming out of Kuala Lumpur is that the people who actually carry out the assassination are actually back in Pyongyang.
However he died, will those who attacked him go free, do you think?
Well, I think if they're going to charge somebody for the murder, obviously they're going to charge the two ladies who were caught within 24 hours. And I'm talking about the Indonesian lady and another lady from Vietnam. Other than that, I don't think it'll go further up the chain.
James, North Korea and Malaysia have an interesting relationship. It's one of North Korea's few friends in Asia.
North Korea does have relations with other countries in Southeast Asia. It's just that the North Koreans have been using the embassy in Kuala Lumpur as the main base of operation for the region.
How are they doing that? What are they doing?
Well, I think one of the things they're doing in Malaysia is that Malaysia, as you know, is a fairly open society. So basically, I think they're using Malaysia for getting around a lot of the sanctions against the North Koreans. For example, one of the sanctions they face is that they don't have access to the international financial system. So I think Malaysia is one of the places where they can send money in and out from Korea.
Malaysia's health minister has indicated autopsy results of the victim could be released as early as Wednesday. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Whether it's brake fluid in Nigeria teething syrup, melamine in Chinese baby formula, or talcum powder in Kenyan antibiotics, contaminated food and medicine is a deadly problem. Well, now a group of U.S. scientists in Indiana have found an inexpensive way to test medicines before they cause any harm. Erica Celeste has more from South Bend, Indiana.
There are many ways for drugs to be corrupted, from manufacturer error to improper storage to fraudulent substitution. Notre Dame University chemistry professor Maria Lieberman hopes to give pharmacists in developing nations an easy way to detect contamination.
The pad is a lab on paper.
The pad, or paper analytical device, project began 6 years ago as a collaboration between Notre Dame and St. Mary's College. The simple invention replaces expensive machinery that might not be available in developing countries. The paper card allows testing of drugs at any stage of the distribution process. Each of the card's 12 lines is laced with a different chemical. When medicine is smeared across the lines and the card is soaked in water, a color change indicates whether the drug is safe. In addition to testing pharmaceuticals, Lieberman's team is developing cards that test lead, iodine, and even urine. Notre Dame graduate student Jamie Luther is working on a card to identify contaminants in milk.
There's tests that are published for, you know, people at home to mix chemicals to test their own milk. And I thought to myself, like, you know, that's so cumbersome. People shouldn't be handling acids in their home and some of these dangerous chemicals with their hands.
In order to discover the most common contaminants, Lieberman's team works with 18 universities throughout the U.S. They use special machines to analyze the drugs collected from pharmacies throughout the developing world. Notre Dame graduate student Nicholas Myers says he never considered what a big problem altered pharmaceuticals were before he started working on the project.
I just took it for granted that chemical analysis could happen anywhere. I guess I didn't know the extent to which low and middle income countries did not have the capacity to do chemical testing.
A New York company is developing a complimentary smartphone app to help read and evaluate the cards. Testers can take a photo with their phones and match it with the app database for almost instantaneous results.
If we can't increase the capacity of analytical labs in the developing world, maybe we can come up with a way to bring that technology in a portable form that will be usable in the field.
The World Health Organization says a functioning healthcare system should have 343 pharmaceuticals on hand. So far, Lieberman's team has developed pads to identify 60 different drugs and eventually hopes to have tests for them all. For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste in Notre Dame, Indiana.
We appreciate you listening to International Edition from VOA. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, and our thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been 6 years since the Iranian government arbitrarily detained three prominent political leaders without formal charges or a trial. Two of them, Mehdi Karoubi and Mir Hossein Mousavi, were candidates in the 2009 presidential election. The third is Mr. Mousavi's wife and women's rights advocate, Sahra Radnavard. Following the results of the 2009 election, many peaceful pro-democracy demonstrations brought millions of people into the streets of Tehran and other Iranian cities. The demonstrations, which came to be known as the Green Movement, were violently suppressed by the government. In February 2011, Karoubi, Mousavi, and Radnavard were detained and placed under house arrest. On the sixth anniversary of their arbitrary detention, the United States again called for their immediate release and for the release of all prisoners of conscience unjustly detained in Iran. Acting State Department spokesperson Mark Toner said in a written statement that the continued house arrest of Karoubi, Mousavi, and Radnavard contradicts Iran's international obligations, including those under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, to which Iran is a state party, to provide minimum fair trial guarantees, and not to subject citizens to arbitrary arrest or detention. The Iranian government, Mr. Toner said, should respect human rights and fundamental freedoms of all individuals in Iran consistent with its international obligations, including ensuring the fundamental right of peaceful freedom of expression and the right to participate in civil society and in the political process without fear of arbitrary arrest and detention or denial of fair trials.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.